Thanks so much for listening. Before I get into the episode, I wanted to thank today's podcast sponsor, which is Coda Luna and their baby keepsake castle. I personally just put all of my baby's memorabilia into these little keepsake castle boxes, and they are so adorable, functional, and if you really love organization, then you're really going to love this keepsake box. So not only is it a keepsake box, but it also includes a baby book, and it has space for capturing all of the milestones of your baby's early years. And then the keepsake box itself stores all of the memorabilia that you want to keep. So baby's first socks and pacifier and the little hat that they wore when they came home from the hospital. So this keepsake castle with the baby memory book is more than just an organizational product. It's a gateway to preserving the remarkable journey of new parenthood. So take a moment to visit keepsakecastle.com today and embark on creating a lasting legacy of love and nostalgia. Hello, thank you for listening to the Finding Your Village podcast. I'm your host, Amanda Gorman, and today I'm going to be talking to Renisha Anderson. She and I are going to be talking about the very important and difficult topic of postpartum depression. Renisha is a mental health professional and certified professional life coach. Her mission is to provide her clients with support so they can flourish and empower themselves. Today, she and I share about our personal experiences with postpartum depression. Additionally, Renisha will discuss the intersection of postpartum depression and marriage and family therapy. Thank you so much for listening to the show today. Hey, Renisha, how are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for being here today, for giving your time, and especially on your birthday. I really, really appreciate it.
Of course. I'm happy to be here. So excited.
Awesome. Well, we are talking about a really, really important topic today, and that is postpartum depression.
Yes.
I am so grateful that I have you to talk to about this because you have experienced it yourself. I have experienced it too. You also are a mental health professional. And so you come at this from such a fascinating point of view where you know what it's like to walk through this, and you also know what it's like to help those that are walking through it. So thank you again.
Yeah, definitely.
So I just wanted to start off with really just sharing your story. If you wanted to give us a little bit of background about who you are, where you live in the country, and then just about your little girl.
Of course. Yeah. So like I said, I'm 24. My name is Renisha Anderson, 24. I have a bachelor's degree in psychology, currently a master's student studying to become a marriage and family therapist. Got one more year left of that. As far as my experience with postpartum depression and how that kind of all set on, I was an undergrad at school, and my husband and I, we actually met in college. We're married now, been married for almost 5 years, living in Texas. And so we met undergrad and we got married. I was 19 when he and I got married, and then we had our daughter when I was 21. So I got pregnant with her at 20, gave birth to her at 21 during my senior year of college. And so I'm getting ready to graduate. I had a thesis that I had to complete. I had internships that I had to complete, all while taking care of my newborn.
And oh my gosh.
So, yeah. So that was a whirlwind, yes, of an experience. And so I can remember, looking back at it now, it's all such a blur because so much was going on. And I can remember almost like being in zombie mode, just kind of like going through the everyday motions and doing what I had to do, but not really enjoying all that I had to enjoy at the time, all that I had to be grateful and thankful for, I wasn't able to really grasp the fullness of everything that was going on at that time.
Yeah.
And so I realized that I was dealing with postpartum depression, and that it didn't really look like what I thought, or the portrayal of what depression looks like, or postpartum depression looks like, which is crying and mood swings and things like that. When for me, it was just a very mundane and kind of just empty feeling. Wasn't necessarily sad. I wasn't necessarily crying all of the time. But I knew that I wasn't okay. I wasn't something was definitely off. And so that's kind of how that whole postpartum depression kind of set on in my own life.
And thank you for sharing that. And I also wanted to touch on something that you said that was really significant. And you said that you said something to the effect of, I couldn't enjoy all the blessings in my life.
Yeah.
Could you dig into that just a little bit more?
Yeah. So, like I said, it was just very, I lacked appreciation. It's almost like how, like when people get a certain type of sickness and they kind of like lose the taste in their mouth. So they're eating food, but they can't enjoy it. That's kind of how I felt. Like all of these things are going on, but I'm not able to enjoy it. I wasn't able to really enjoy my pregnancy the way that I wanted to. Even just like I dealt with postpartum depression, but then afterwards I realized that there was a little bit of depression going on even while being pregnant. And so of course that continued after I had given birth to her. And so all of these things that I really wish that I would have enjoyed a little bit more, just her being that small. I can remember at that time, you know, she's waking up every 2 hours, even more often than that. And so I was looking at the negative of it, which was, you know, I'm not getting any sleep, rather than the fact that, you know, I have this newborn baby who isn't going to remain this way. And I'm going to look back years later and wish that I could go back to her being this small. And so I just wasn't able to enjoy and appreciate the blessings of the now back then. I was so busy trying to fast forward and get to a place that I thought would be better than where I was. And, you know, that wasn't necessarily the case.
Wow.
Yeah.
That resonates with me so much. I had a very, very similar experience. Thanks for just talking about that a little bit more. Yeah. And the reason why I wanted you to go into that a little more is because, well, I personally had a very similar experience. And I feel like that's a part of postpartum depression that's kind of elusive, that it is also a little bit of a slippery slope. Yeah. So I'll share a little bit of my experience to kind of talk, to go into what I am referring to. Like you, I was very stressed during my pregnancy with my son. So that was my second child. Second pregnancy, and was just really stressed with work and had to travel a lot and just some just other stuff going on with work that was particularly very, very stressful. So like you, I mean, you had a lot going on with school and just all everything that you mentioned, but I can at least relate to, you know, being really, really busy. For me, it was not necessarily getting to kind of nourish myself and feel like I could give that self-care time to myself that I wanted to for my baby, but for me felt like I just had to be on and perform all the time. And so to me, when I looked back, I think that I also kind of started to get depressed maybe even during my pregnancy, and it may have come out as like stress or even, you know, anxiety. And for me, I had both postpartum depression and postpartum anxiety. But what you said about wanting to enjoy the time and enjoy those moments when your little girl was so little and you know that you would never get that time back, I absolutely know what you mean. And for me, I just felt like the worst person, the worst mother, like what's wrong with me? This immense guilt and shame even at times of just like, why can't I enjoy this time? I almost felt inadequate. I see other moms, just they seem like they're having a great time with their kids. Or for me, since I experienced this
with my son and did not experience it with my daughter, I thought back to, why can't I do this with Cooper like I did with Grace? Mm-hmm. So was guilt, feelings of guilt, was that part of your experience?
Absolutely. So while I was in school, like me and my husband, we were both still in school. And so my mom, she would come, and they lived in another state, which was like about 4 hours from where we were living. And so my mom would drive to come and get my daughter, and she would take her back with her. And I can remember feeling so guilty, just all types of just hurtful things to myself. Like, you know, you're a bad mother. Why would you, you know, have a baby while you're in school and you know that you're in school? You know, just you're so irresponsible and just beating myself up tremendously, which was, of course, no service or of no benefit to anyone. I'm going to be of no use to anyone, not my daughter, not my husband, not myself, you know, when I'm just sitting here tearing myself down like this. But of course, at the time, you know, the emotions, they just overwhelm you and you're not even able to think, you know, straight like that. It's just, you're just engulfed in your feelings and the guilt and, you know, the shame and all of that. So yeah, I can definitely relate to that.
Well, thank you for being brave and vulnerable and sharing that. For the listeners, I'll reciprocate and share a little bit about this week. So Renisha and I were supposed to record this actually on Monday, and I was just having a very difficult day. It's been a super busy week for me. It was my daughter's birthday on Wednesday. And so at the very last minute, I requested to cancel and reschedule. And Renisha, you were just so sweet and gracious to say, no problem, I understand. And for me, it goes back to exactly what you just described of me just beating up on myself. And you even were so encouraging to me this week, you know, when I needed it, to say like, it's okay. There's no reason to beat up on yourself. These things happen. I understand. I'm a mom and I'm busy. So thank you for doing that and coming from a place of understanding.
Of course. Absolutely. I totally understand.
Yeah. Well, thank you. And so, so if anyone out there is feeling like any of this is resonating with them, feelings of guilt or even shame, you know, I would just pay it forward with Renisha's advice to me this week, which is don't beat yourself up, give yourself some grace as well. And, you know, and just know that you're doing the best you can.
Absolutely.
So going back to your story, you talked about how, you know, you kind of realized this about yourself, those feelings of guilt. And then meanwhile, you are a mental health professional and you're in the middle of getting your master's degree in mental health to help specifically in the area of marriage and family therapy. Could you go into just what your experience was like, you know, kind of realizing that you had postpartum depression, what you did to remedy that situation, and then just how it intertwined with your studies?
Yeah. After I had my daughter, I remember specifically it was the week of midterms that I was scheduled to be induced with her or to have her. And I was scheduled to go to the hospital like 8 o'clock that night. And so of course, during the school day that day, I'd taken my last midterm. And I specifically scheduled my induction so that I could finish my midterm. So I took my midterms.
Oh my gosh. You're kidding me. No. Wow.
Yes, I did. I scheduled it after midterms. So I took my midterm, and it was actually with one of my favorite professors, and I'll talk about her a little later. So I took the midterm, and then me and my husband went. I got induced, gave birth to my daughter, and then I took a week. I took a full week off of school. I told all my professors that I was taking, you know, I wouldn't be in class. And then a week after having her, I was back in class. And so one of my professors, she's a licensed professional counselor, and she'd been, you know, in the counseling field for well over 20 years and had been teaching for a while too. And she and I would always go to her office and we would talk and stuff. And so she kind of picked up on the fact that I wasn't, you know, my normal self. And I can remember talking with her, and eventually we had decided that I would go and see the counselor on campus, because we had a counselor on campus. And so I remember going and just talking with her, and it was just so it felt so good and relieving to be able to just say how I was feeling without any guilt or without feeling like I was dumping something on someone that wouldn't be able to handle or that would look at me a certain way for saying that I felt a certain way about something. And so that's when I realized that, okay, you know, not only do I, you know, I know that I want to do this as a profession, but I also know the benefits of it for the people that I would be working with, the benefits of counseling and how it feels to be on the other end of that, which only furthered my desire and my wants to become a licensed therapist. And so having to deal with depression and realizing that and coping with that, it was still an awakening experience and an eye-opening experience for me that this was something that I definitely wanted to do and was a passion of mine.
Wow. That is so cool. Yeah. I love that. I mean, talk about focusing on silver linings. So another thing that I just really admire about your story and find really cool and fascinating is that you shared with me a couple of weeks ago when we first met that you were interested in therapy and going into counseling, but you yourself hadn't actually gone to therapy or been in therapy until you were in college. Is that right?
Absolutely. Yep. That's exactly right.
I just think that is so cool. I mean, wow. Like how much foresight you must have had to be interested in this.
Yeah. I actually started out when I was in high school, I think it was like my senior year, I started out saying that I wanted to be a family lawyer just because, you know, I liked relationships and people, how people interact with one another is like a really big thing for me. And so, and the family dynamic and family structure. But then I realized all the paperwork that goes into being a lawyer. I don't really think this is for me. And I've always felt the pull to help others and to be of service to others. That's my heart. That's the type of person that I am. And so, yeah.
Wow. That is so cool. And, you know, one thing that I really hear throughout your entire story, continuing this week, is just this theme of resiliency.
Yeah.
Could you talk about that a little bit just from your own personal perspective and then just what you've learned in your studies in the field of mental health?
Yeah. So for me, resiliency and being resilient has been a pillar in my life because when it comes down to it, I just felt like I didn't have a choice. You know, it's when faced with obstacles, when faced with situations, you really only have, depending on your outcome, your desired outcome, you only have one choice. And so if your desired outcome is to reach a certain place in your life where you're satisfied and you're happy and you're living your life on purpose with purpose, when struggles and obstacles come, if that's your end goal, you have no choice but to keep going. Because the only other alternative is to sit in here and dwell in this. And then again, you're not creating the life that you want to live, that you were created to live. So for me, resiliency is key because, I mean, at the end of the day, I don't have any other choice. And that's something that I've always had to remind myself is that, okay, Renisha, yeah, this is happening, but if you want to get to this place where, you know, you say that you are happy and you are content and you are, you know, satisfied with yourself and the life that you've created, if you're saying that you want this, then you have no other choice but to pick yourself up, you know, do the self-work, analyze whatever it is that you need to do to get to where it is that you want to be. And so resiliency, like I said, has been key for me because, I mean, it's needed. Because things are going to happen. We aren't able to control what life throws at us. We can only do so much. And so inner work and self-awareness and becoming aware of your ability and your response to certain situations is all that you can focus on in order to get to where you're trying to go.
Yes, absolutely. I love that so much. Okay, I want to throw a question out to you that's a little random on that topic, though. To me, it's a little nuts, but in general, I have found that many adults that I've encountered, myself included, are not really built with the, they're not equipped with, not built, mm-hmm. they're not equipped with the tools for resiliency,
yeah.
for growing that muscle, or even processing their emotions. Like, mm-hmm. I swear to you, I just learned how to process my emotions this year. And I'm 33. Okay. So, and to me, it's just, it's mind-boggling that so few adults have the tools in their toolkit to properly do this. Mm-hmm. And it's like we're all just kind of running around bumping into each other with all of our issues that yeah. we're not taking the time to do the inner work mm-hmm. on, like you said. I think it is because we don't know how.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
With that, my question to you is, what's your advice for folks that are just, they just don't really know what to do, and, or they're like, okay, I'm tracking with you, inner work, that sounds all good, but like in practicality, what does that look like every day?
Yeah. So I like how you said, you know, how you explain adults and how we don't necessarily use certain tools or take hold or get awareness mm-hmm. of certain tools to allow us to operate the way that we should or the way that we could. And I feel that the reason why it's so easy for us to neglect self-awareness or to neglect the work that needs to be done in order to get to where we feel and we really do deep down on the inside desire to be is because self-work and self-awareness and analyzing and all of that stuff is difficult. It's so much easier to just suppress ugly truth about ourselves than it is to acknowledge it. Or at least we're given the illusion that it's easier to just ignore these things and just keep, yes. you know, doing what we're doing because it's familiar to us. It's comfortable to us. We've been doing and operating in certain ways for so long that we don't even realize that they're unhealthy and dysfunctional. And so what then happens is we start, you know, like you said, bumping into each other in all of our mess because, you know, we've just gotten comfortable in this dysfunction and not even yes. aware of it, that it's dysfunctional. And so it exactly. looks weird to us that, you know, you're going to acknowledge that something's wrong with you, or you're going to acknowledge that you're feeling a way that isn't, you know, necessarily a positive thing. You know, that's yeah. taboo to people to be like, you know, to check yourself about anger that you're directing or projecting onto someone, where it's weird to, you know, sit down and try to figure out why you're sad, what's the core reason for however it is that you're feeling, because it's not something that people do. It's just not the norm. And so my advice to someone who is listening to this and is saying, okay, so you're telling me that me sitting in my dysfunction or me suppressing negative emotions isn't the way to cope with them, then what is the way? What am I supposed to do? And I say it to clients and I say it to, you know, people that I come in contact with all the time. It's a difficult process. It's not a pretty process. It's not sunshine and rainbows. You're going to have to dig up, depending on how long you've been suppressing certain things. There's no telling what you would, you know, you're going to dig up in the process. However, what I can say is that you'd be better off digging it up now and dealing with it now and facing it head on now than allowing it to continue to fester, because then it's going to get control over you. You're no longer going to be in control. It's going to have control over you, your feelings, your past experiences, all of that is going to have control over you. And so the first step is to acknowledge that, hey, I'm not okay. And that it's yep. okay to not be okay. That's the first step to getting to where you want to go, is first realizing that you're not currently where you want to be. And then I think it's so important to come in contact with people or a person who will help you navigate life's obstacles and who will help you and be there to support you. Because like I said, it's a difficult process as you begin to dig up these things and as you begin to identify certain emotions and how they come up in your life and how they manifest themselves in your life. So I think it's really important to have a support system or just one person even that's there to celebrate your successes as you are growing and you're shifting your mentality and to help you and to remind you of the big picture and your end goal and the life that you're wanting to create. So to first acknowledge that, hey, I have a certain place in life that I want to get mentally, emotionally, spiritually, physically, and I recognize that I'm not there right now. So now let me do research. Let me search out tools. Let me do my part. Let me put in the effort that I need to put in to seek the help that I need if I don't already know, you know, how to get to that place. And so those would be my two biggest pieces of advice.
I love that. And I will say that for me, I completely agree. And a tool that has been really, really helpful to me that I have begrudgingly started using is just like writing things out and journaling.
Yeah.
And I always found that to be a little lame, or I didn't want to do it because, like you said, inner work is actually hard work, turns out. So I like went out and got some cute little notebooks from Target, and I sit there and I write stuff, and I will use the advice of my own counselor and therapist that I see. And I have found that it has been very helpful. So that's just my two cents that I'll add on from my experience.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to specifically ask you about the intersection of postpartum depression or even postpartum anxiety with marriage and family therapy, which is your area of expertise.
Yeah. Postpartum depression, postpartum anxiety, depending on the family dynamic and the family structure, will determine how it affects the family and the couple as a whole. Either way, it's going to impact those that the person is involved with. So for example, if a wife has, or a mother has, like you were saying, children already, and then is now giving birth to a new baby and is now experiencing postpartum depression or postpartum anxiety in a way that's unfamiliar to her. And now her children, who, you know, are used to seeing their mom in a certain way, are now getting a different side of mom due to the fact that she is struggling with postpartum depression or postpartum anxiety. So now the depression or the anxiety isn't just affecting the mother, but it's also affecting her children that she's already had prior to this new child. And so what marriage and family therapy does in instances like that is that it allows the therapist to see the family as a unit rather than just dealing with the individual, dealing with the anxiety or the depression. Because that's one of the biggest things that I love and I enjoy so much about marriage and family therapy is that they look at the issue in its entire context. It's not just the person, because when you look at the person, you're cutting yourself off and you're limiting yourself from all these other factors that are a part of that person's life. So what marriage and family therapy does is that, like I said, it allows the therapist to deal with the issue in its entire context so that nobody is left out and the children are able to, you know, appropriately get understanding of, you know, what's going on with mom. And they're able to understand that, you know, mom's not angry with you or she's not sad or you didn't do anything wrong. So the children, they're getting an awareness and they're understanding a little bit about what's going on as well, depending on their age level and things of that nature. And then, of course, with couples, like newlywed couples like myself and my husband, when I gave birth to our child, that shifted. That was a dramatic shift in our relationship. And so with marriage counseling and therapy, it allows, again, not just looking at the spouse who's given birth to the child, but also including, you know, their partner and giving them an understanding of what's going on with their spouse, because they're not aware or they're not realizing what all is going on with their spouse that's dealing with postpartum depression or anxiety. So they're able to understand what's going on and they're able to understand their role and what they can do to aid and to assist. So there's definitely great use in marriage and family therapy when it comes to postpartum depression and anxiety.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense, especially what you just said about particularly husbands and wives. And I'm going to speak from that perspective because I'm a wife and I have a husband.
Yeah.
So with that, what you just said in particular, I think that that is a really tricky part about postpartum depression that I feel like maybe it can easily get overlooked, but you can tell me if I'm wrong. In my experience and opinion, guys typically like to be fixers.
Mm-hmm.
They like to fix things. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's not a stereotypical discussion between a husband and wife where the wife just wants to vent and the husband is like, well, maybe you should do this at work to fix your problem. And she's like, I just want you to listen, you know? And I feel like that scenario for me personally, has kind of reared its ugly head in it with my struggle with postpartum depression, because my husband wants to fix it. And I'm like, but you can't fix it.
Yeah.
There's nothing for you to fix, but you can hold space for me.
Mm-hmm.
You can learn so that you don't take it on. And I think this can particularly be a problem when a guy doesn't quite understand it and he wants to fix it, and he could even take it personally.
Yeah.
About like, why is my wife not acting the way that she did before? Or why is my children's mother acting differently towards my children?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just think that that is, like you said, if you don't look at the situation within the whole context, you just miss a lot. And I feel like it can really do families a disservice.
Absolutely. I like what you were saying as far as it being a hit to the husband's ego.
Yeah.
And so that opens up a whole nother door of, you know, issues when the root of the issue is that, you know, they just need to understand what's happening with, you know, the postpartum depression and anxiety. And so marriage and family therapy helps to, you know, take all these little things that's bothering the individuals, the couple, the husband and the wife, and narrow it down to, okay, what this is the core issue. So that we're not, you know, spiraling into, you know, something that's unnecessary, or, you know, nobody's making any assumptions, like you were saying, because husbands, men do like to fix things. My husband was the same way. And, you know, I know it would be a huge hit to his ego if he felt like, I'm doing X, Y, and Z, and it's still not enough, and she's still this way, and so I'm doing something wrong.
Right.
And it has nothing to do with them. So marriage and family therapy would help to remedy that and aid in that so that it doesn't become something that it doesn't necessarily have to be.
Thank you so much. Okay, I'm going to hit you with one more question, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
So, all right, right now, in the time of COVID, in the pandemic, something that is really, really near and dear to my heart is parents with newborns. And just the isolation that they're experiencing right now, I feel like, from my understanding of postpartum depression, my experience with it, that can make women more likely to experience postpartum depression, just the isolation.
Mm-hmm.
And even though most of the world is not really quarantining anymore, most people who have newborns are. So my question for you is, what advice would you have to parents with newborns right now in particular, or parents with, you know, little ones, and they are just choosing to self-quarantine to protect their families? What advice would you have for them to do inner work and some self-work that is something that they can easily do?
Yeah, I think when it comes to self-work and trying to become self-aware, the very, very first thing that you should become knowledgeable in and aware of is that when doing this work, you absolutely, positively cannot do it without learning how to be gracious and kind towards yourself. Because the second that you start beating yourself up, everything is going to go down the drain. You won't be able to accurately and efficiently be honest with yourself, because you're going to put up a defense wall against your own self because you're beating yourself up. Before you even start trying to do the work, first take a second to understand that you are enough, you are loved, you are special, you know, all of that good stuff. And understand that, yes, there are going to be some ugly truths, and that's okay. There are ugly truths about everyone. That doesn't make you any less of a person. It doesn't undermine what it is that you're trying to do. So getting a good grasp on being gracious and kind towards yourself is key in self-awareness and self-assessment and all of that stuff. As far as specific ways on doing the work, another key is honesty, being completely honest with yourself, because you know the truth, and lying to yourself isn't, again, all the work that you're trying to do is immediately gone down the drain the second you start lying to yourself about something. So honesty is also key. And as far as specific ways to do the work, there's so many ways. Like you're saying, journaling or just taking some time out of the day to just sit in silence and really become in tune with yourself. Prayer, even, whatever it is, it depends on the person and the person's beliefs in, you know, what they are trying to do and what works for them. As far as resources go, there are tons of, I know nobody actually reads physical books, but audiobooks that you can go and read about. And then I also, right now, I am studying to get my master's degree. Like I said, I have a year left of that before I'll apply for my licensure, but I am currently a certified professional life coach. So I offer, while I don't necessarily treat any sort of disorders or anything like that, mm-hmm. I do aid people in creating the life that they want to live, in doing the work to self-reflect and to dig up ugly truth and to acknowledge them and to identify different emotions, to become emotionally intelligent and be able to point out certain things within themselves. I work specifically with women who are feeling stagnant and unsatisfied in their lives, and they're not necessarily able to pinpoint exactly what's going on. I offer an array of services for personal development and things of that nature. And then I also, if feel necessary, provide resources for specific things that maybe I don't necessarily specialize in. So
I love that. And if anybody is interested in working with Renisha directly, how can someone get in touch with you?
Yes. So I have my website. It is renishaelaine.com. It's spelled RonishaAlaine.com. And I actually really wanted to say thank you to all of your listeners and to you, Amanda, for having me on here. So I created a special discount code for anyone who is listening to this and feels the desire to reach out and schedule an appointment or a free consultation and see if life coaching is right for you. Awesome. And the discount code is FYV, finding your village, FYV40. And you can get 40% off of all of my services and coaching packages and plans that I have available via my website. And then you can also, if you would like, reach out to me on my social media platforms on Instagram and Facebook, and all of my handles are Renisha Elaine, just like spelled just like the website. Those are some ways you can reach out.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. And thank you for being so generous.
Of course.
And I am going to link to everything that Renisha just mentioned on the show notes. So to her website, I'll also include the discount code and then social media handles as well. Thank you so, so much. I just cannot say thank you enough.
I'm so happy to be here, Amanda. I thank you so much for this opportunity, this platform. This has been amazing.
Absolutely. Well, thank you again. And I hope you have a wonderful rest of your birthday. And I hope that listeners have a great rest of their day. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Remember that Renisha has offered 40% off her coaching services on her website that I've listed on my show notes. Just use the code FYV40 at checkout. Have a great week and take care.